Welcome to the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Hartley. This podcast exists to equip and inspire your heart-centered leadership. Every week, we bring interviews with some of the greatest heart sets and mindsets on the planet. I hope the heartprint of our time spent together is that it creates new possibilities for you and all those you come into contact with. If you'd like to explore what we could make possible for you, then head to abty.co.uk/connect and book in a free 30-minute call to begin our journey. On episode 250, it's my honour to welcome our great friend Nathan Todd to the podcast. Nathan is also known as the Loneliness Coach. He is the co-founder of The Self-Assured Man, which is a wonderful community all about helping disabled men redefine masculinity through the power of community. It's our great friend, Nathan Todd. Nathan Todd, welcome back to the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast. How are you, brother?
And it is a beautiful day, and it is a new year, so I'm excited.
I love that. For those that are watching on YouTube, you can see he's wearing the Always Better Than Yesterday cap. Thank you for sporting that, mate. You look beautiful.
Hey, it's one of my favorites, man. I love this hat.
Thank you, man. You were first on the show, episode 52, August 2019. Man, do you know the thing about I love about you and I? Was a couple of things, but like we're still here, still doing the same thing, still showing up, like that that consistency, that desire to continue to bring good to the world, and I'm grateful that we kind of do that like entwined together. Like I just love the fact that you just show up, both for yourself but also within our community, and you've made it onto a number of our community conversations podcasts, man. I'm just grateful to have you in my life, and I just cannot wait to give you a bear hug, man.
I love it too. Look, you grew a lot more hair. I lost a little bit more, so
evens.
Yeah, it all evens out.
Yeah, man. There's some real depth to your work, particularly over the last couple of years. Do you feel like you've evolved in your, because I think when we first spoke, you know, I think you were 33 at the time, and I think you really felt a huge degree of purpose in what you're doing. But would you say like over the last few years, it's really deepened?
It's definitely deepened. And right now is interesting because it's the vehicle for what I'm doing is shifting. Like the purpose isn't changing, but the vehicle in which I deliver the purpose is changing. So in the beginning, I mean, I think a lot of people who end up doing coaching work, I feel like a lot of them can relate to this. In the beginning, I didn't know what I was doing. Like, I was just showing up thinking, okay, this is the idea that I have. Let's see what happens. Right. Yeah. And it was very broad.
Like, yeah. But I think for good people like yourself, there's a grace for that because there's a heart involved. There's a knowing at a heart level that there's a genuine desire and a willingness to help people. And like, I guess the how follows the heart of it, which is, okay, well, how do I best do that? And I love that you talk about the vehicle of expression, and because that's what it means to have a heart set, which is from the heart, we come into the world. And I've got written down here a number of different forms of your expression, including story time with Mr. Nathan.
Yeah. Yeah. It's You could have never got me to be like, if you had asked that 33-year-old version, whatever, would I be reading story time over the computer to kids? No, there's no way I could have guessed that. And I think that's where I'm at now, is really trying to embrace the idea that I don't have to know. Like, just let me show up. Let me be present in the day. And who's in front of me is who's supposed to be in front of me. Even in the times when it feels uncomfortable and I myself am navigating what could be labeled as negative emotions. They are there for a purpose. And do they always have to teach me a lesson? No. But what's happening is what's supposed to happen, whether I understand it to a full degree or not. Because even with that example of story time, the outcome of what's been created there is completely different than what we expected in the beginning. Like the idea that this guy from the South in the United States is like being seen by people in the Ukraine, people in Russia, and you can tell that what they're doing is they're learning English through watching me read them a story. Like, there's no way we could have said this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, man, that's beautiful. And how does that expression of your heart, like, how does that make sense to you? Like, what is the root? What is the golden thread between all of your expressions? What's at the core of your heart, brother?
Yeah, I really do think it comes down to wanting people to feel seen, heard, and loved. And I think that one of the biggest ways, for story time specifically, where that happens is I'm not just reading you a story. I came into it with the purpose of just like I had seen on TV when I was a young kid. Mr. Rogers, even Blue's Clues, even though I didn't watch it, I think he did a really good job. And I just saw a video of him talking about what he felt made him different. It's like, this isn't me reading and waiting for you to just move to the next thing and me talking to the camera. This is me creating the idea that we're having a conversation.
Yeah, and one of the things I'm really keen to have in this conversation is just to really shine a light on the great work that you're doing, specifically as an advocate for disability. Because there's one thing to make people feel seen, heard, and loved, but especially that community. You know, there's so much that I hear and see in your content that, you know, it gives me greater empathy and awareness in ways that I could never possibly understand myself, because you're giving a voice and a champion to this community, and I want to honor that, and I would love to have that play out in this conversation, because I think it's really important. And I guess for you then, like, how do you see, in essence, if you don't mind me asking, your own disability as a vehicle? How do you see that? How have you had to go through this journey yourself, and before you've
Yeah.
become someone that's able to be this champion for others?
Well, I had a great start. Let's start there. I had a mom who had to learn to advocate for me when I couldn't do it for myself. And so she had to go outside of her comfort zone. Like, she wasn't comfortable talking in front of hundreds to thousands of people. And somewhere she was like, well, if I don't do it, then my son's gonna have a really hard struggle just to begin this journey of life. And so I saw that. And, you know, one of the things I talk about often is we rise to the level of our modeling. And so I was able to pick that up just by being. I wasn't like being asked to do anything. I was just there in the essence of what was happening. And so that was a really big help. And the fact that when I was a really young kid, I was on those stages and I started being asked to speak, even though I could barely put together sentences and all that. Like, that still plays a role in like me as a person. That's an experience that I had. And I mean, I was on local television for thousands of people to see before I was 5 years old. And I look back at some of the news articles, and it's a reminder to me that the way they wrote about me as a little kid, that still gets to be me. Like, the energy I brought when I was that version of myself, that's the true essence of who I am at the core. And they talk about my smile, and I'm like, that just is me. Like, that's not going anywhere. People ask all the time, why do I smile so much? I don't know why, it just happens.
Joy expressed through the face. What is it, brother, if people have never come across you, never come across your work before, what is it that you specifically have and you don't want to say struggle with because that would be an assumption, but what disability do you have and how does that affect
Yes.
you?
So I've got cerebral palsy, and it's spastic diplegia, and really how that affects me is majority in my mobility. And so that happened when I was born, and I wasn't diagnosed until I was two. And again, going back to my mom, it was she recognized something was different and that something was going on. And she would take me to the doctor, and they couldn't figure it out for a long time. And then I got diagnosed. And so that impacts a lot of things. Like, it impacts my vision. It impacts my ability to stand for long periods of time and walk for long periods of time. And, but again, you just notice some of these things as you get older. Like, when I was a little kid, I just was who I was, and I was doing what I could with my friends in the best way that I knew how, trying to be a kid. And I think as you get older, depending on your disability, like, one of the biggest struggles that I had was the fact that, hey, Nathan, maybe you do need to use a wheelchair. Maybe it's more beneficial for you to use a wheelchair. And just in the fact of you want to have energy to be able to enjoy whatever it is you're at with your friends, instead of proving that you can walk and get around. And then when you get there, you're just like, okay, I'm completely done. Because we spend about 3 to 4 times the average amount of energy as someone who doesn't have cerebral palsy. So.
It's absolutely, I mean, thank you for going here. And, for me, I never know I just sit here and I think, you and I are doing the coaching work. We know the value of the words I am and the identity. Some of that's the stuff that we give ourselves. Some of that's the stuff that's given to us and all things in between. And particularly if we don't have the awareness to know where any of that comes from. And then you start to think about, oh, for me, I was just reflecting on myself, like, I'm rubbish at asking for help. I'm like knuckleheaded, like a plow it on my. And I think, how does someone in your situation deal with that possibly being your personality type? Like, is that a luxury, not being able to ask for
Oh.
help? Like, is there a stubbornness? Is there a fight? Is there a resilience? Like, there's a lot of thoughts there, my friend. But how do you kind of reflect on what I've just said?
Yeah, no. I would venture to almost making a generalization that all people with disabilities suck at asking for help. So,
man,
and it's because of the
right.
identity that we've
Yes.
been given.
Yes.
So we already have this narrative for a lot of us at some point in our life that we're not good enough. And so how do I fix that? I overcompensate to prove to you what I'm capable of. And, you know, one of the things, there are several conversations that I know need to be had in the disability community and about people with disabilities. And I'm not even saying I'm close to being the person that has any of the answers, but disability comes with this sense of abandonment.
Right.
And it's not always going to be abandonment by the people that are close to you. But when you're that cute little kid that everybody wants to be around, and you have all these services that you're getting, and then you grow up, and they say, oh, you're not cute anymore, and guess what? You have to leave these services because you've aged out, and now some of you aren't disabled enough to be deemed qualified to receive the services you were getting before, then what does that say? It says, what am I supposed to do? And now I'm all alone by myself. Like, who can help me? Like, yes, there can be people that can advocate and be a support. But I think that's one of the biggest reasons why I've moved into the self-assured man and working with men, because I also think that the pendulum swings really far on one end. So now we are all about inclusion, and inclusion is a great thing, and I believe in inclusion, but some things, like, dudes with disabilities are going to understand me at a different level than even you can understand what I'm going through. And so some of that needs to happen in that space where people are safe enough to say, yeah, you know what? I do feel abandoned. Like, that is something that I'm dealing with. And then you have people that are like, oh man, I feel that too. I've been there. And another thing that needs to be talked about is grief. Disability is filled with grief, and most people don't even know it because it's not shaped by the grief that we normally know as death.
Right. It's the death of an idea.
Yes.
The death of a vision, the death of a possibility that can't be realized.
Yes, and we are the shittiest people at being like, we will take ideas to the end of the story. Like, if somebody's hitting on us and they're showing a bit of interest, oh, we've already been married and now we're stuck in this idea. And then, oh, that didn't happen. Oh, it died. Oh, yeah. Shit. Like, yeah, it's the I love that, the death of the idea.
Yeah, and that is both a blessing and a curse of being capable of metacognition, thinking about thinking, having a vision, having the foresight to see something that may happen. It's like, I'm grieving something that wasn't real but felt real. It's like, I've got to let that go too. You know, and I guess, you know, if we're eyes open, ears open, you know, most Disney films are about the happily ever after, right? The happy ever after, and I don't think that's that's reflective of most people's experiences. Mike, you said the word inclusion. My son's school are almost stopping the word disabled, and they're calling it diffabled.
Oh,
They're
God.
calling it differently abled. How do you feel about that? How do you feel about the word disabled and diffabled?
So I know that my belief isn't going to stop the use first and foremost. So anybody who believes in the differently abled language, that's going to be their language. And there are still people who use the word handicapped, right? It's almost like going and using slang to some degree. Like if you're talking to your son and he's like, yeah, that slaps or what, I don't even know, man. But they're using their lingo. It's a way to identify what culture you grew up in. But here's why I would invite people to think very deeply about using the word. So, whether we identify it as a positive or negative word based on the dictionary, it is the word that the government uses to identify us as a group of people. So it's important to be able to identify with the word if you have a disability, because if you don't identify with it, you're going to limit the amount of services you can get because you'll say, I'm not disabled. And I'll be like, oh, clearly you are.
And I guess it comes back to your earlier work, which is having that having the inner knowing that no label defines you.
Yeah,
It's that,
like,
okay, I'll come to the world, I'll play by the rules of the world, but I know that this doesn't define me.
yeah. I mean,
It's easy said, right? Easy said.
ultimately, there is a level to this reality. Like there are things that, like, I am one of those that energy is everything. Like one of the things I say is every relationship is a collaboration of energy. But there's a level to this physical reality that we get to navigate through, and we have to be able to do that well. And the only way to change the identity of a label is to use it.
Yeah, you said about this reality that implies that there's another reality, that there's another. What? I mean, you know the types of guests I've had on this podcast over the last 6 months, particularly in the spiritual realm. Right? Is that what you're referring to about a different possible reality? And how does that shape some of your existence in this plane?
Yeah, I'm getting really deep into what's happening around me that I can't physically see. And getting into like you and I had a quick conversation about prayer, right? Like religion has been one of those difficult subjects, and I think that's also a disability conversation too.
Yes, please.
Because we are told we are broken. And imagine being the parents of this child who is also being told by certain people that this is because of your sin. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't make sense. And I do not choose to believe that. And everything that I believe about Jesus and God, and it's like that just doesn't fly with me. And I do. I've always felt like I am here for a purpose, and I am made this way for a purpose. I have
There's
always
peace in
felt
that.
that.
There's peace in that because, and And this is the issue I have with some of the Christian faith is, or particularly people practicing the Christian faith, is that there's an ego projected onto the, my God can heal you. You know, if I just bring the name of Jesus and I pray and I can heal. But the supposition of heal you is to assume that you're broken, assume that so there's a flaw, assuming that God's made a mistake. And it's like, there's a flaw in your psyche there. Because if we started to look for something as everything is, as it should be, you know, everything is an expression of the divine, then there's just love and gratitude for the existence. There's amor fati, which is the Stoic phrase of learning to love what is. That's where peace comes from. Not I'll be peaceful when I've changed this situation to fit my will. Man, that's some spiritual stuff. Like, that's some next level Jedi stuff. So like, are you able to get to that now you're in your 30s? Has that been a progressive kind of perspective, or have you been at peace with that for a while?
So as far as being disabled, I think I've been at peace with that for a really long time. Now, that's not to say that I've liked every moment of it, and I've not ever questioned like what the hell is happening. But I still think it was easy to get to that point of, dude, this is what it is. This part of you is not changing.
Well, that's the opposite of love, isn't it? Love is the acceptance of all. It's the inclusion of both the yin, the yang, the light, the dark. It's the wraparound. And for as long as you're rejecting part of you, you never really get the full presence of being seen, heard, and loved, right?
I think this does bring up a great point, though. I think as humans, you still want other people to acknowledge you. And like, one of the greatest lessons I ever went through was I was at a emotional intelligence training, and one of the exercises was looking at yourself in the mirror naked. And I would say that's probably one of the hardest things that I've personally had to do, because I don't look definitely like what is projected on all the images that we would see. And so I would say that is definitely one of the hardest areas to always stay in acceptance. Yeah. And you're like, man, you fucking like, you really do suck right now.
Well, you know, and this is the powerful stuff, man. And I love that we're going here, because and I appreciate your vulnerability as always and your commitment to this, because, you know, like we had that little interaction about that Chosen clip where Jesus says to little James, like, in time, but I know that you're going to do more of my work in this realm because of your disability, shall we say.
Yep.
And it's like, oh man, like what a perspective to have, is that you will do so much goodness in this lifetime because of the journey and the work that you're doing with your situation. You will be an apostle. I call it a heart worker, right? You'll be the one in the world bringing the light, and there will be people who only have ears and eyes for you and your message because of the way that you lead, because of the way that you show up. And man, like that's courage. That's pure courage. Like, because it would be easy for you to go, do you know what? I'm sick of this abandonment stuff. Like, you know, because every little thing exposes us to be micro abandoned. The post that isn't engaged with, the video that's not watched, the any of it, right? The people who don't sign up to our stuff. It's for anyone that's experienced abandonment, you can project it onto anything. And yet here you are, man, still showing up. You talked about looking in the mirror, and yet you have the balls to talk about being sexy and disabled. Like, talk to me about sexy and disabled. How does that happen? What goes through the mind of someone who is disabled? Relationships, like, how do you have the courage to come to those? Like, be a light for people in this moment. Where does your heart want to speak into?
Yeah. Oh man. Sexy and disabled. How did that come about? I think part of that was just I was around the right people at the right time. And big shout out to my partner, Dr. Michelle Finan. I think the Clubhouse, as far as we're speaking about that, was one of the biggest like advancements in that conversation. And it happened because she's a sex therapist who we just started talking. And so it led to more conversations around being sexy, sexuality, and disability. Mm. And like, I think for people that are listening right now, one of the conversations that you need to have if you are somebody with a disability is what makes you sexy. Like, actually define that for yourself. And if you don't have a disability, why do you automatically deem people with disabilities as less attractive? And if that question rubs you the wrong way, there's definitely stuff to look at there. Because I'm not here to decide that for you. I'm just here to offer up the conversation for you to be like, oh, I do wonder why that is. And we've actually talked about that. Like,
yeah,
it's a conversation when it comes to dating. Like, for me, there's lots of practical. I go into my logical side of my brain, and it's like, okay,
yeah.
Like, this person, to some degree, are they going to be willing to help me when I need help?
Yeah.
And so that also plays a role in would I want to date somebody with a disability myself?
Yeah.
And it's, well, like,
that's important because there's something specifically on a website that I want to touch on.
Okay.
I think it's very important that you've made the differentiation between going, rather than knowing what I am not, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not that, put that image of, we were just talking about Baywatch before we came on. Not because of the models, but because of, you know, Nathan's off to the West Coast and it was a ridiculously cold sea. But it's about looking at, okay, well, what am I? Where is that spark? Where is that, like you talked about, the energy of the smile and how you are sexy? Where is it shown? Where is it evident? And then in knowing that, you come to the world being that. And there's a bit on your website that talks about taking any relationship. Like, I've often joked with my wife. I say to her, my favorite thing about her is that she loves me. Like, it's like a joke, right? It's like an abandonment joke, right? And so, haha, I can laugh at myself. But you know, I guess, you know, particularly from the disabled community as well, I can only imagine the inner pressure to go, oh, well, I found someone. It's not quite who I love deeply, but I don't want to be alone. So what is this inner kind of conflict maybe around, you know, taking any relationship?
Oh yeah, I very early on definitely abandoned my own like values in trying to start a relationship with somebody. And yeah, you know, part of that could have been that conversation that was happening internally and me not even being aware that was actually what was happening. But it
Yep.
was also like, oh yeah, this girl's hot. So I'm willing to put up with that. But I think one thing that would actually help and would require courage is for other people to tell you what's attractive about you. If they find you attractive, like I think that's something that, at least in my experience, I don't have a lot of people telling me that I'm attractive. And so how many other people with disabilities aren't having that either? Like there's lots that goes into this whole conversation that's not even fully disability related, but like tell somebody what you find attractive about them and watch confidence grow in that person, and you'll see a person that you might not even recognize because, look, nobody's spoken life into them in that way, and be like, oh, this is a different person now. Yes, it is.
I love that. One of the most powerful clips I've seen you and Dr. Michelle talk about is when she was telling a story about, not believing it's possible. I see it. I see that I can see it's possible, but it's not possible for me. And your response just blew her mind. Like I could just see and hear, like she just took a moment just to soak in what you said, which is that you don't have to. You don't have to believe it's possible. You don't have to fall into the trap of the world that says, hey, believe in yourself. Actually, there are sometimes people around you who can hold that space, bridge that gap for you. And it's exactly what you've just said. And I love that you do that for people. It's to bridge the gap, to help play back to them the picture that you see that sometimes they don't see in yourself, in or in themselves.
Yeah, I believe that that's I have to go back and give credit to my mom again because she's the most relevant person to me that I've actually been able to witness this. But she was able to like you had somebody asking about 2019. Well, from 2017. She still does it today, but she definitely was holding vision for me and doing stuff when I wasn't capable of doing it. And I think that one of the reasons I'm here on this earth is to have those conversations around things that people deem as negative. Like, sometimes you need to talk about the negative. And it even goes back to why I call yourself the loneliness coach, because that's what people are searching. That's what, like, yeah, do I help you create connection? Absolutely. But that's not what you're searching for help for. You're not guaranteed, you're not like, okay, you might say, why do I need more connection? But more than likely, you're like, I'm lonely. How do I fix this?
Well, and that's it. We I say we loosely, the business online business world is riddled with niching down and all sorts of ways to approach your the way that you speak. And you're right, that when you came out with the loneliness coach, it's like, oh, what, he's coaching people to be lonely? But you're right, it's like, if that's what you're all about, if that is the pain with which people are experiencing, then guess who they're looking to? Guess who they're looking for? This is you, it's your heart, man. Like, you've mentioned your mum a couple of times. I don't know how freely you can speak about your father, but I'd love to know your perspective on what that relationship was like, particularly as someone that's gone on to now be in the masculinity space, and not only just the masculinity space, but the disabled masculinity space.
That's interesting just to hear the disabled masculinity space, because it makes me question. How many people are in this space?
Well, maybe you're pioneering it, my friend.
Yeah. I do find it more difficult to talk about my dad. And I think part of it probably is because I'm a male. And, we talked about visions of who we're supposed to be. I think that's something that also doesn't get talked about is like, our parents want us to be. And my dad, you can still hear me. Okay.
Yeah, we can hear.
My dad went to training camp for the Atlanta Falcons, so an American football team. And so my dad's over 6 feet tall and pretty big dude, and like that identity, that's what I saw modeled as masculinity to some degree. So we're sitting there, I'm seeing my dad and I'm watching all the blood sport, the Rambo, all Arnold's movies. And like again, to some degree, there's at what age, I don't know, because it wasn't like that always. But as I got older, there was the realization of, oh, Nathan, you're probably not going to be able to do some of this stuff, and I really wanted to do that stuff. And I wanted to do it probably so much more than my little brother. And yet he was the one that was physically capable of doing it. So I can only imagine, because we've never had this conversation, but I can only imagine the pressure of living up to this identity for him. And he's the one that has to bear the weight of that pressure.
It's just pressure and expect subconscious or even internal pressure everywhere. We talk about grief and letting go of stories. Your dad would have had to do that, and
Yep.
different generation, 30. I have a firm belief that our parents' generation suffered at the hands of their parents in micro ways. I'm not saying massive, but didn't have the resources or the support to be able to transform that pain into purpose. And I
Yeah.
think that our generation is the first real generation that's making a go of being able to turn that pain into something. It's like first generational change makers, right? So you've got potentially a guy that didn't know how to, and I would hate to speak on his behalf, but to let that go, to grieve the vision of the image, the unspoken pressure that's put on you that you can't fulfill an image that was never your. It's just,
Yeah.
there's just dynamics going on everywhere.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I've often found myself, I don't remember specifically what the conversation was about, but I just remember me, my dad, and my brother being in the same room, and something was happening where we had to have a conversation. And it was like, okay, this is you, Nathan, are responsible for creating this conversation, because if you're not the one that's going to step forward and start it, it's not starting. And it's like looking at your phone and being like, oh, the average call time is 2 to 3 minutes. So how do you get these guys to talk about
Right.
something meaningful for more than 2 to 3 minutes. And I just remember saying, he's not saying this because there's a sense of this is happening. And I just remember that we were all crying at the end of that conversation. And it's like, how often do you see male figures in your life cry? I can definitely probably count that on my one hand. Because you don't do that. Like, that's the identity that the generation before is definitely, and the generation before them, you don't do that. You don't show emotion, you don't show vulnerability. And I think that is actually a superpower if people let it, for people with disabilities. Especially if, like me, you were born with yours, you have no choice. You are a vulnerable person, regardless of what you want to believe. And so I say this because, like, I lift all these weights, man. I'm a strong motherfucker. And yet, you catch me in a back alley, guess what? Old Nathan's not going to be able to do much of shit unless I get you on the ground and make you immobile. And I think that's a reality that help my disability helps people open up to me because they don't see me as a threat.
Yeah, but what I think makes you make possible is through that vulnerability, is that it gives others permission to go wherever they need to go within themselves to heal whatever they need to heal, right? That's, I think that's the power of the trust. It's the permission, it's the ripple effect. It's because you've gone first, I feel safe enough or inspired enough to follow you. Like you said the word earlier, pendulum. I truly believe that there is also a risk in men being too emotional. So there's a difference between vulnerability and emotional, like over emotional. What I mean by that is a man who isn't emotionally aware, cannot self-regulate. So I interviewed Dr. John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women From Venus. And he says that when men do too many things that are pleasurable, nice, just feels nice, it gives them too much estrogen. And too much estrogen in a man's system becomes an addiction. So things like food, gaming, porn, all these nice, comfortable, convenient things that men have at their fingertips is whether masculinity is defined by testosterone or not, a man with too much estrogen in his system becomes self-serving. It doesn't become what I believe the masculinity, which is that it doesn't use whatever power he has to hurt other people. Whatever that power be, the power of the tongue, the hand, whatever that might be, it's about denying our own so that we may be of service to others, however that may look.
Yeah. I think, you know, the speaking about, oh man, it just makes me think, I call it the angry disabled person.
Yep, let's go.
Syndrome.
Yep.
And so
angry at the world, at people, at loved ones.
I just put it wherever you want it to be, man. You can be angry at all of that. I think that I'll probably apply at some point, but I think that's what gets in the way of just speaking about the regulation and the discipline, right? Like, I think people with disabilities lash out so often because they've hit their point of dealing with stuff and they don't have the skills to communicate it in a safe and let's go with the word appreciated, a safe and appreciated way. Because I would easily lash out at people I loved all the time. And it was because I didn't know what to do with what was happening within me. And like, I can still do that. I still get pissed a lot of times and then will lash out. I mean, that's just a human thing, but I know that I believe it happens more often with disabilities because we don't have spaces to talk about our experience where we actually feel heard and we don't feel pitied.
Right. That's a very powerful word. I want to pick up on that in a second. And I think the responses you talk about are two sides of the same coin. So we talked earlier about overcompensating, taking any relationship. I think the other side of the coin is what you've just talked about, is the anger, the frustration, the lashing out. Because I think they're two sides of the same coin. One is a softened heart. And one is a hardened heart.
Yeah.
When I say softened, I mean mush. Like, it's just fearful. It's like, it's acting out of fear. Therefore, it's like, codependent. Don't abandon me. Don't leave me. I will do whatever I can to change and deny myself so that I may not be abandoned.
Yeah.
I will deny my own expression of what I would like in fear of rejection.
Welcome or to disability.
Right. And on the other side is like, well, I will make demands that my needs are met and I will show frustration because you can't love me in a way that I need to. But man, that word pity, like, I think sometimes people can be awkward, man. I think sometimes people like, you know, and I think you and I can have this conversation because you know that I have a heart for connection. And I think that gives me a little bit of grace if I say the slightly wrong thing. If I say it in such a way, but people are so in their minds that they try and do the right thing and they trip over trying to say the right thing. And it's just clumsy and awkward. I can only imagine.
Well, that whole thought process, talking about being clumsy and tripping out, like, it just leads to avoiding.
Right. It's easier not to.
Yeah. People don't say it because... You just lead me down other stories, man. I love it. So this
remember the story we ended the last one?
No, I don't.
The last one ended with the urinal. Is it going to top the urinal story?
Probably not. In terms of, that's a pretty good story. But
let's go. Sorry, I distracted you.
So it can lead to people avoiding so much that you can get pulled over by the police. And if you have that little placard hanging in the thing, they will do everything within their power to let you go unless you've done anything so egregious that they're like, I can't. And I believe it's for that very reason. And it's just an interesting place where we've gotten with society that, you know, we're walking a bunch of lines and we're going to offend. Somebody's always going to be offended. Like, one of the questions was like, how do I help everybody feel seen, heard, and loved? How have I changed over time? It's not actually my responsibility to be that person for everyone. I just have to show up in that posture.
What does that mean?
It means I still think some people are assholes. And I'm not the person to serve them.
Sure.
And I think there's a lesson in that for both parties, myself and the other person. Like, yo, what could have made this be this guy's response? Because I'm no saint, man,
Yeah.
but
There's this idea that we can learn from everybody, but we shouldn't learn from everybody. It's like, because there are some people out there that are on a different path, that are on a different path, and do not give us the permission to be their teacher.
even if they say they want you to be their teacher, you might not be meant to be their
But there are a
teacher.
group of people that have absolutely given you full permission to be their teacher, and it's called the self-assured man. Tell me about the wonderful things that you're making possible with the self-assured man.
Yeah. So I'll start by saying this. This is so we've had two what we're calling community events. And that's free for any man with a disability to show up every month and just be in community. But one of my favorite things that I've heard come out of those conversations as of now is how deep does this go? How deep does this story run that's causing me to show up in this way? So, what are we creating? We are creating a space for men with disabilities. And I want to start by saying we're creating a space for them to feel accepted. Like, why was it created? Because I was rejected. That's why it was created. I went looking for a men's program, and they were like, look, this isn't for you. I'm like, okay, yeah. And they obviously didn't say it that way. But what I was taught before the self-assured man started taking shape was my masculinity is 100% dependent on my physicality, on my ability to be physically capable. Because 80 to 90% of men's programs are run by military personnel. And what I really wanted to say to that person, and I didn't, was what the fuck makes you think I am not as resilient as these individuals just because I can't do this physical thing? And you're leaving out a whole population of men who are looking for community and could be a great asset to your community just because it's limited to this one aspect of physicality. And they were using the physicality to get to the vulnerability.
Which is why many people have big physical muscles and bodies, but they're just a big shell. There's never really been cracked open as a vault. One of the so I've just interviewed a guy called John Eldridge. He's written a number of books, masculinity, one of them called Wild at Heart, which is all about discovering the secret of a man's soul. And one of the kind of core questions he says that that a man has to come face to face with, so that he, matures into the adolescence and masculinity in its fullest, is have I got what it takes? Have I got what it takes? So there's an underlying assumption and principle that there's a degree of competency, which is great, because no one's saying, this is where I like what you're saying about come and redefine masculinity in a way that works for you, is that competence isn't based on a specific ideologue, that there's this Rambo and Rocky. It's based on, well, what is it that you want to be good at? What is it that you want to be? What is it you've got? Like, you can be good at what you've got. Take some time to figure it out, what it is that you've got. Like, if I'm basing my masculinity on my ability to do DIY, dude, Ain't no masculinity here. Like, do you know what I mean?
We're both in trouble.
I was not blessed with. Do you know what? And this is a failing of my hierarchy because I have two very, you know, I have a grandfather and a father that's very, very good at woodwork. And then I look at myself and rather than judge myself for being inadequate with a drill, I'm looking at it going, no shit, I can't use one of those things because the people above me didn't teach me how to use the damn things. They weren't around.
Yeah, dude, I had that exact conversation.
Yeah.
Where somebody was talking about my brother and I just got tired of it. And I was like, well, you know, some of us don't learn certain things. So how can you expect somebody who hasn't learned something to be able to do it? And I was just at that point, I was just frustrated. And I was like, look, this is the reality of it. You need to stop bagging on him because it's pissing me off and I'm getting defensive over my brother.
Yeah. It's powerful stuff. And then I saw one of your video clips, which is all about having the people within your group, you know, be able to trust themselves, be able to, I think this is your assessment. I think there's an assessment that you've got on your website about how self-assured. You talk about trusting yourself. You talk about articulating and living by your core values. But then there's this one word that I think really steps out that if you can do this, then almost like as a man, you can go into the world and it doesn't really matter what's going on around you. Because if you respect yourself, you're not seeking other people to respect you. And that's a really powerful thing. If you can build enough respect for yourself, whatever goes on around you actually has little or less effect, shall we say. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, dude, this was the question we asked this month to everybody, and it was, am I enough for me?
Yeah.
And
what sort of answers did you get to that?
So what we did was said, you can have three answers. You can say yes, no, and I'm not sure. And we got across the spectrum answers to that. And so if the answer is no, you know, it's about, and I think that's why this work is so important. Like, I've been blessed to be able to ask the right questions at the right time that are needed for somebody to look at themselves differently. And so it leads to questions of, well, how did that conversation start? Like, where did it start? And it's like, I do this thing where I talk about you're supposed to be self and then your trademark self. And so you're supposed to be self is all the ideas of who you are supposed to be, wherever they came from. And you write those down. And then after you figure out whatever comes up, start asking why to each one of them. And then you dig in on the why. Like, okay, here's the reason number one why that came up. So why did that thought then come up? And
I think in that space, I think what you're tapping into there is probably the greatest thing that's given me access to this self-respect and the love that I have for myself is that actually I come face to face with my flaws and my shortcomings and the very reasons that I may be unlovable in a certain way is actually because I've felt unloved in different ways in different situations. And then I go, ah, so that response is actually an unlovable way to try and gain love. Ah, I can have compassion for that guy or that kid who has acted out of that pain. Whilst his methods weren't always effective, it's like, yeah. I get it. I no longer reject that. It's like, okay, I put an arm around it in myself and go, ha, all right, cool. There's no need for you to disappear anywhere.
Yeah, and disability is one of those things. Like, this is probably at least right now, one of my favorite things I've ever created. And it's just a list of questions, and I don't have them in front of me, so don't ask me what they are. But it's that disability is shrouded in shadows. Your disability has created a shadow self. And how well do you know that shadow? And what I think this disability or disabled masculinity work is going to do, my hope for it is we create a whole group of leaders. Like before I ever did any of this, again, it was people who saw my capability when I couldn't see it for myself, because I had very similar experiences show up for me. There are times when, like, it all comes down, and I'm like, okay, don't really know what to do. And after college, my family was working to, like, get me involved in the world. And that's where disability really smacked me in the face. And it's like, oh, yeah, it doesn't matter how talented and gifted you are. There's this thing at play that up until now, you've only had to face in a very different way than the work world sees it. But I started doing all this work at disability organizations. And so I was at that point, I was the youngest person that was employed there by a long shot. And at a certain point, I was like, okay, I believe in all this disability work. I believe in advocating for people with disabilities, but me being here in this capacity is not where it's at anymore. And people have recently asked me, so why don't you come do this thing? And I was like, yeah, I don't see myself coming back to the movement in this way. I've been called to lead a different aspect of this and
Power
show
to you.
up in a different way where you're not allowed to show up. And there's a freedom in what I can do, because I'm in charge of doing it. I don't have rules and regulations currently in my way to make this happen. And like, can we work together to create something? Maybe that's a possibility, but me coming and doing this in this capacity is not where it's at. And going back, people need all different kinds of representation. When I was at that job, it was very political. And so I saw the people you mentioned demanding for their rights. And the whole time I was seeing that, I was like, wait, but that's not going to, like, that's not actually getting us what we want. There has to be other ways to communicate what you're, because I believe in what you're actually fighting for 100%, but you're not making me as a human want to invest in what you're asking for because of the way you're approaching it. And we need people who are willing to fight, and we need people who are willing to, like, be the softer end of the people who are fighting.
Well, again, it's what you were talking about with Dr. Michelle in terms of the anger video. It's getting to that fed up moment, that being done, but choosing to use that anger in a way that it ascends in vibrational frequency. So if we're talking about the work of David Hawkins in Power versus Force, David will say that there's a lot of energy in power, a lot of energy in anger. There's more energy in anger than there is in guilt and shame.
Oh,
So
yeah.
you're showing up in the world, but when you get to the, it's social justice that helps us flip to then love. We can act out of courage and bravery and love and service and compassion, so that no, this is the kind of superhero story, right? The villain will stay at anger, and it will use that anger to ensure it inflicts pain on anybody else that gets in their way, because, you know, whereas the superhero takes it from anger, social justice uses the love, the compassion, and I think that's exactly what you've just spoken to there, is about how do you stop shouting at the world and start serving the world? Because, you know, those that shout, you see it all the time in all of these kind of like groups, the minority type groups that just become a noise of entitlement. And I agree with what you say, it doesn't do their case any justice when it comes to human matters of going, oh yeah, let's listen to these reasonable human beings who are demanding stuff of us.
Yeah, and I think when we got off our call, one of the things that I said is this self-assured man is not a support group in the way that most people with disabilities think about support group. This is a program for you to gain skills, to be able to regulate your emotions, to be able to be a better communicator, so that you can show up as the most self-assured version, the most confident version of yourself. And this isn't about just coming together to bitch about what's not going right in your life. It's to say, oh yes, we do have a common experience that's happening. What are the skills required of me to actually ascend past this story, create another one, and be the most present version? Because I think that's what this is about, is really being able to get present with yourself and not get caught up in like stuff that we've talked about earlier of projecting out this story that you're expecting. It's about, where am I right now? And I saw this video, and I don't want to attribute it to the wrong person, but what they were talking about was getting on social media, having conversations through podcasts, and being all lit up about, yeah, we made the most amazing conversation. And then that's the conversation that, like, it just falls flat. They're like, how could this happen? But it made me think, as I was listening to them, about, it's like, the way we show up to other people is different than what we believe, how we believe we show up. And the idea that, what if the most compelling and impactful version of you is the version of you when you are speaking and when you are showing up feels like the most boring version of you? And it's because it's your most authentic and most natural way of showing up. So you see it all the time when you are alone. And so you're like, I don't want to be boring.
Yeah. Well, my mentor, Bob Berg, he says, sometimes the trouble is we know ourselves too well. We know every single thought. We know every single thing we've done, good, bad, and indifferent. And sometimes we just know ourselves too well. One of the things I'd love to kind of end with is the thing that really stood out for me with the Conversations with God work of Neil Donald Walsh. I don't know if you're familiar, but it's all an expression of divinity, you know. And I think when anybody, whether they're disabled or not, identify that or is not, that if we could just see all of life as an expression of divinity. Again, there's no labels required for that understanding of everything is just perfect as it is, right? And it's only a projection of the human ego that suggests that we want things to be different in any other way. So when we start to see that everything and everyone is a fractal expression of divinity. Maybe we start treating each other as such, treating us walking or doing whatever we can, however we're able to move, doing that as such. And, you know, the last thing I took from Neil Donald Walsh is that we're all here on this earth with different contracts. We've all, whether people believe this or not, there's this idea that we all choose our lifetime. We choose the mm-hmm. path, we choose the parents, we choose the life that we inevitably go on to live. And then our time on this plane becomes about remembering the truth of who. What a sadistic game, right? Go to Earth, play. Remember who I... Who, it's like the clue was there all along when I watched Mufasa just in the clouds. Remember, right? The clue was there all along. It's my favorite film. It's just like, ah. But that's it. Yeah. Like, you know, I don't know whether you resonate with what I'm saying or not, my friend, but someone will. And it's this idea that your circumstances were chosen... And for the very purpose of the sadistic game and idea of discovering and creating and remembering and creating who we truly are. And you, my friend, are well on that path. You've grasped that concept. I truly believe that you know now more clearly than you've ever known who you truly are. And... that's why you're a self-assured man. That's why you're taking this path. That is why you are called to lead this community as a pioneer. Why? Because you have remembered who you truly are. And that's what I feel from you. And that's why I wanted to have this conversation, the first one of 2024, my friend.
I appreciate that. And I absolutely... feel that. I think over the past year and a half, I've absolutely felt that. And so, you know, you shared a post I made, what was that, yesterday or the day before? Like, I truly believe that it's about asking, who have I come here to be? Not what goals and outcomes have I come here to accomplish. That shit will take care of itself when you start being who you are in alignment with. And like, I think it sounds even weird for me to say it, but it's what I feel. I feel like my whole purpose right now is to do a lot of surrendering, to do a lot of giving up. Like, there's so many things I went into this particular part of my journey thinking I wanted to create. And in reality, are there cool things that I want to do? Absolutely. But ultimately, it's about letting go of all that and being like, I'm okay with whatever shows up and however it shows up, but I do need to be paying attention so that I can notice when things are happening. Because if you're not paying attention, you know, people say things that are meant for you won't pass you by. Well, maybe that's true, maybe that's not, but maybe it can pass you by and you have to wait a long ass time for it to come back around.
Yeah. It's this idea of Elizabeth Gilbert, isn't it? It's ideas want to be made manifest by a willing human participant. And if you're not aware or willing, or then it'll just go to the nearest willing participant.
Yeah, man.
My friend, I want to be super respectful of your time, but I could talk to you all day. But we just talked there about surrender. And I think one of the things that surrender makes space for is higher possibility. Things that, you know, people with a left brain preference to logic won't like me saying this, but I think surrender makes miracles possible. It allows the forces that we cannot see to move in ways that we may not be able to force ourselves. So I think surrender leaves space for miracles. I think it allows, you know, if people relate to the word God, it allows God's will to be done. And I know that magic things happen when we make space for that. What do you, Nathan, think, reflecting on your time, reflecting at the end of your days, what do you hope your heart print will be?
That anybody who spent like a little ounce of time, some might say a mustard seed, less so to say, right? That they feel more capable in showing up as themselves. I was talking to a friend yesterday, and I said, look, all I can do is I can show up and listen. I can do my best to not say anything that invalidates your experience. So what I hope that people remember is I'm somebody who cared. I'm somebody definitely for my disabled brothers and sisters, for sure. I'm somebody who didn't just show up to say I'm a leader. I showed up to actually show you that somebody cares. And they're willing to hold you accountable to what you say you want. Because I think a lot of people don't do that. And ultimately, just somebody who loved, man.
Well, I love you, brother. I'm always grateful to spend time with you. I'm grateful for you being a present part of our community. And where can people find out more about your work, my friend?
Yeah, the selfassuredman.com. Or Instagram at the real Nathan Todd.
Yes, great. I'll add all that to the show notes. Brother, be honored if you'd leave us a final thought from your good self.
Yeah. The final thought is, those traumas that you've experienced, it's not your fault. It's just something that happened. It's a circumstance that showed up, and it's not your fault, and it's not your burden to have to worry about carrying that. You are enough as you are, and your job, as we talked about here today, is to remember exactly who you are, because when you do that, how you show up in the world is going to shift, and you're going to see massive changes.
Brother Nathan, appreciate you, mate. The end. I hope that our time spent together today has left you a little bit better than before you push play. I'd really appreciate if you just took a moment to leave a review to allow me to meet more people where they are and hopefully leave them a little bit better too. If you're curious to know how I, through Always Better Than Yesterday, can serve you, your team, your organization, then head to alwaysbetterthanyesterday.com to connect. And while you're there, let me know one or two things that you're going to do as a result of listening to this conversation. I absolutely love hearing your thoughts, your reflections, and the things that this spark in your own heart and mind. If you want more insights from my heart and mind, I do send out short episodes on a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. And again, I hope that they serve you well. I appreciate you listening. I'm Ryan Hartley, host of the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast, a podcast for heart-centered leaders just like you. Keep leading, my friends. Always love.